Welcome to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Hometown Hero Outdoors is glad to partner with the veteran-owned Best Defense Armory and Range in Forest Lake, Minnesota as our preferred firearm supplier. They also offer a state-of-the-art indoor firing range that is open to the public. Visit them at bdarmoryandrange.com to browse their inventory. Here is your host, Chris Tatro.
Hello, welcome to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Today we have a couple special guests that I've gotten to know pretty well over the last year and a half here. We have the Matsons, Eric and Megan Matson, out of Waseca. Eric was a former police officer down in Waseca, Minnesota, before he was involved in a shooting with a life-altering event that occurred when he was shot in the head. We also have Jeremy Hankey. Jeremy is a co-worker of mine. Jeremy is a conservation officer with the state of Minnesota, and he is very good friends with the Matson family. So we have a pretty unique show today to talk about the Matsons and their life and what they've been through over the last 2 years, to include what's to come, and then also share Jeremy's story and his events and the accounts that happened the day of the shooting with Eric. So welcome, everyone. Thanks for being here today.
Hi.
Awesome.
So first and foremost, I'm going to have Eric introduce himself. Eric, if you want to give a little background about who you are and what got you into law enforcement.
Sure. My name is Eric Matson. And like Chris said, I was a police officer in Waseca, Minnesota for about 7 years. And then January 6th, 2020, I was shot in the head by a person who was on another person's house and suffered a traumatic brain injury. So pretty much since that day, I've been doing rehab to try to get back to our new normal.
Been a pretty long road.
It has.
It has, yeah. And you got a pretty strong wife that's sitting there next to you that helped you through this and continuing to help you. So,
yes.
Pretty awesome. Megan, want to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Megan Matson. Eric and I actually met 11 years ago on a traffic stop. I was speeding. He did not give me a ticket, though.
And because he wanted to get a date. That's why.
Yep. So that's how things started. Jeremy and Eric were actually working together at the time in Fremont County, as in the sheriff's office. So that's how the connection began with Jeremy. And we have two beautiful girls, Adrina and Macklin, 10 and 7. And I'm a stay-at-home mom, caregiver to Eric. And yeah, they keep me busy between the three of them.
Yeah, I can imagine. Some pretty big life changes that occurred for you guys that no one expected.
Exactly.
Well, it sounds
definitely
like
not looks, what we thought life was going to be like, but here we are.
And you're adjusting well, and you're making it through. And a very common word that we use and hear quite a bit from Eric is persevere, you know, and that's happening with you guys. And you got some pretty cool, exciting things coming up down the road here with a new home and new house. We can talk about that here in a little bit, but that's pretty exciting. Mm-hmm. Then we got Jeremy. Jeremy, want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Jeremy. I guess I met Eric back in college. He was actually one of my TAs for one of my law enforcement classes, and got to know each other quite a bit through that, and him grading my papers and such. So then he got hired. He was a year in front of me in school, and got hired down in Fremont County, and like a good friend, followed his footsteps and tracked him down to Fremont County. And we both were deputies together down there, working night shift together, and doing a lot of night shift stuff and having fun. And then Eric ended up in Waseca, and I switched to the state. And we've been friends and hunting buddies ever since. We usually get to see each other a lot more come fall and hunting seasons, and duck hunting's are kind of our thing together. So,
very cool. How long you been duck hunting for, Eric?
Since I was 10 years old.
10 years.
35 at the end of August. So,
it's quite a while then.
Yes.
And when you started your outdoor life when you were 10, was there any other things that you like to engage in when you were in the outdoors? It's just was it fishing too, or?
Yeah, I spent time with my uncle. My uncle Paul was the one that kind of got me going duck hunting.
Okay. And your uncle Paul gets to go on a pretty awesome excursion with you down the road here, so it kind of comes full circle with the hunting career on that side of things. So we'll talk about that a bit later here too. But Uncle Paul, big shout out to you for getting Eric going in the outdoors. We appreciate that. But then, And then Jeremy, your hunting and fishing career, you know, with being in the outdoors and finding that a passion, what did that come to fruition?
I mean, I've been hunting since the day that my dad and my great grandpa would take me out on the farm and hunt some squirrels with a 410, and fishing since I could hold a pole.
Touch my lips.
Trying to instill that into my kids as well. But duck hunting and stuff in particular didn't start happening actually until college. Nobody in my family did much duck hunting, so I didn't get a passion for that until I met some buddies in college that started duck hunting. But deer and fishing and pheasants, all sorts of different small game was what I grew up doing.
Nice. That's pretty awesome. And then you two, Jeremy and Eric, began hunting together after you got hired at the sheriff's office together or in college?
Mainly, you know, kind of once we were hired at the sheriff's office, we lived like two doors apart from each other. So it worked pretty good for one of us to pick the other one up, or in most cases, one of us wake up to alarm and the other one go wake our other buddy up, to drag him out of bed to go hunting in the morning, which happened a few times for both of us, I think, but living that close, it worked really good to get out and hunt together too. So,
and you guys live fairly close currently still, right?
Yeah. Right now across the lake, but soon to be a couple miles from each other on the move here for them.
So it'll be even closer then. Not really.
It'll be about the same distance.
The same distance.
Okay. Well, that's nice. He'll at least it's not
our house every day now when he takes his kids to school.
Right? Nice. Well, that's cool. So then hunting, you guys did your hunting together, worked law enforcement together. Megan, let's go back to you're talking about this traffic stop that happened, right? So you guys met at that point. And then who asked who to go on the first date?
Actually, Eric ended up going to the place where I worked at the time, Applebee's, with a buddy one night. And I was not Eric's server that night. So he was texting one of the guys from a table that I was serving at, and he's like, why do you get the hot waitress? And so I had to go give him and his other friend I went and flirted with them, I guess, if you would say. And he ended up getting my number that night, and we talked for a few months, and it wasn't till like July when we started dating. Yeah,
then the rest and is here history. We are. Yeah. How long were you married before the night of the shooting?
6 years.
6 years. So established, you know.
Yeah.
Been together a while. Yeah. Two children at that point. So very good. Well, let's talk about the evening, the events that happened during Eric's shooting. I know that was a pretty wild night for everyone that we're speaking with, and probably pretty emotional to recall a lot of those events. So I know that if it gets emotional, I totally understand, but are you guys comfortable with talking about that night and everything that happened?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah.
We can have Eric start off.
Perfect.
So the night I got shot was actually January 6th of 2020. And I wasn't scheduled to work, but I picked up a shift for a coworker so they could spend time with their family. And really all I remember was going to my favorite Mexican restaurant in Waseca and eating supper with my coworkers. And then the next thing I remember is waking up in a hospital bed and Megan coming up and saying, you got shot last night at work. I'm like, what? And once he got no way, I got shot. She's like, yeah, you're fine. You made it through surgery, though.
Wow.
So I can take off from that. Yeah, it was just a normal Monday. And the girls had school. Then they had dance. My mom went with us to dance that night. And we usually used to go out to eat on Mondays. And for some reason that night, I was just like, you know what? Like, let's just go back home. And I had talked to Eric on the way home. This was about 6 o'clock. No, it would have been 7:30. You guys had a late supper that night. And asked him to pick me up some chips and salsa and guac. That was my thing. And before I knew it, we were getting into our bedtime routine. I didn't think anything of it. Eric hadn't called. Usually he always calls at 8 o'clock to tell the girls good night. And it was a school night. It was 8 o'clock. The girls wanted to stay up and watch a movie. And I'm like, no, 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 you need to go to bed. And they're like, oh, come on, let's watch a movie. And for some reason I gave in, and they got themselves all comfortable out in the living room on the sofa. I proceeded to do a load of laundry. It was about 8:20 at this time. No, it was 8:07. Sorry. 8:07 at this time. And that's actually the moment when Eric got shot. And I was in our kitchen and dining room area. And I like to recall that it was like a spirit had entered me, and I was looking from the inside out, the outside in, however you want to say that, of my body just standing there still watching everything around me happen. And I had told the girls to get up. They needed to go to bed. I watched two angels hold them, carry them, walk them down to their bed, and they didn't brush their teeth. They didn't get a bedtime story. I didn't tuck them in. They just went to bed. And then as I'm coming back, the spirit re-enters me, and I'm like, you know, wow, like, what was that? Like, what's happening? And I went to bed. I grabbed some headphones, listened to some Pandora. I actually had a phone conversation with a girlfriend of mine for about 10 minutes, and I fell asleep. So this is about 8:20 to 8:40, and I had gotten into like a dead sleep for like 5 minutes, right? And all of a sudden, I hear a knock at the door. Well, back in the day, Eric and I used to own a detailing business. So it was super common for people to drop off their vehicle at a later time at night because they work third shift. So the blinds were shut. I thought it was just somebody dropping off a vehicle because I peeked through and I was like, gosh darn it, Eric, are you serious? Like, you could have gave me a heads up. And that's when it dawned on me, like, wow, actually, he didn't even call. Like, why didn't he call to say goodnight? And as I open up the door, there's a state trooper there. Jeremy's there, an investigator is there, and one of our good friends are there, and they're standing there, and they say, hey, Megan, Eric's been shot. It's really bad. You need to come with us. Like, hurry up, grab your things. I mean, they were flustered. Jeremy, he wouldn't even look at me in the eye. He couldn't. And he can explain how he felt that night, but he couldn't even do it. I asked Jeremy to go over and tell my mom what had happened. And then I needed Jeremy to go get Eric's mom and Albert Lee. And so that's what he went and did, while the other three came inside. And honestly, I was actually the calm one because I was so shocked that I felt like I had to calm them down. And before I knew it, within like 10 minutes, I was on the road and headed up to Waseca to get into a helicopter to go up to North Memorial and see Eric. I mean, I don't know. When then my heart was racing, I was speechless, no emotions for at least 2 hours. I didn't know what condition he was in. I don't know where he had been shot at the time. when I had gotten to North Memorial, and to this day, I regret not taking a photo, but you don't think about it in the time. But there, it was just an unbelievable scene from the sky. You could just see three rows of cop cars, first responders, surrounding that hospital. And that was the, oh my God moment. Like, what is happening? What did Eric get into? Like, what is going on here?
Right.
Life is about to change.
Yeah.
That's a pretty wild night.
And the support, yep, too, when I had entered the hospital and we got into the waiting room, there was hundreds of cops and people in the hallways, everywhere. I had never, that was amazing, unremarkable. It was, wow.
How long was it, when you got to the hospital, how long was it before you got to see Eric?
I got to see him within, I think, 15 minutes, 15, so, 20 minutes. And I actually was shocked because I was like, wait, what? Like, he got shot when? And it's what time? Like, why is he not in the operating room? Like, I just did not understand that. And they were like, oh, because he's stable. Like, he's fine. I'm like, so it's not that bad? Like, he got shot, but where did he, you know, he got shot in the head, but it's not that bad. Like, I just didn't understand that, why he wasn't in the operating room.
Trying to navigate that whole situation. Yeah, that's got to be pretty difficult. You know, he got shot in the head and they're trying to figure out what the next steps or course of action is, and you're confused why it's not happening faster. That's accurate. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So then I was able to go back there and they say to say your goodbyes, you know, just in case. So that night I had really clinged on to my friend Lori Anderson, and you know, now looking back, I maybe should have had Eric's mom with me, or you know, his brother or something, but I wasn't thinking about that in the moment. I was like, nope, you're my person, you're the one that told me you're gonna be with me, like I'm not letting you go, you're my safe person right now. So Lori came back there with me to go see him for the first time and say my goodbyes. And I don't know if you guys ever watch like Grey's Anatomy, but if you, in any of their episodes, it seems like there's always like, there's a hallway full of nurses and doctors and police officers on both sides. The lights are so bright, yet it's so dim down below. And I couldn't even, like, none of them would look at me. I couldn't look at them. I was just watching my feet, and I entered the whole operating room and it was just surrounded full of cops and the surgical team. And there he was laying there, and it was just him and me, you know, it was just us in that room. And the moment I seen him, that's when I first cried. I actually screamed and I fell to my knees because I knew he was fine. I looked at him. I'm like, wow, it just looks like he got punched in the face. Cause they had him so bandaged up really well for me. He was very presentable and I knew you were going to be okay. But then they came out and said it was going to be what, a 3-hour surgery, Jeremy? But I think it ended up being 5.
Yeah, it was longer than they said. I remember that.
Yeah. So then everybody was trying to get me, you know, to eat and mingle and make phone calls. And we were praying and we were talking. And I think, I don't know, Jeremy might have said, you know, how about you go lay down? It's going to be a little bit. So I went to go lay down on one of the sofas, but it was the one sofa that, like, every time the door is open from the surgical room, you can see him come down the hallway. And this one's a hard one. This one, it makes me choke up sometimes. But when Eric's surgery was all done and that door finally opened, everybody was kind of doing their own thing. And I could see the surgeon, Dr. Roach, he must have hit the button down the hallway farther so that the door opened. And he just took his hat off, took his mask, took his gloves, and he was just so, like, just let out a huge sigh. And right then and there, I was like, he died. Like, he didn't make it. Like, I know it.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, great, now I have to hold myself together. I'm like somebody better grab me because I'm going to like fall. And then the surgeon came out and said he made it. And all I could do was give him a hug. And he just stood there because they're not supposed to show any emotion. So he just kind of like, okay. But yeah, that was the one and only time I thought he had died for sure. That was tough.
Well, Dr. Roach seems like a pretty phenomenal neurosurgeon. I know you guys have a relationship where you went and saw him not too long ago at his retirement, I believe, right?
Yes. Yep. He's a grandpa now and hanging out with his grandbabies. And where did he go? I can't remember.
Like East Coast or something.
Yeah, somewhere in the East Coast. But yeah, we keep up with him and he keeps up with Eric's story. And he's a great guy. He saved Eric's life.
But well, like thank you, Dr. Roach.
Yes. What did Dr. Roach say? It took many hands to save your life. It wasn't just Dr. Roach.
It's a team. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, I know I've talked to a handful of different nurses that have helped Eric through his time there too. And definitely they keep checking in to see how Eric's doing and where he's at. So it's pretty incredible to see the team that comes together to help someone when they need it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing. Jeremy, you want to talk about, you know, what you remember from that night?
Yeah, it was it was Monday night, and me and Eric are also on the volunteer fire department in Freeborn. Where he should have been that night was at the fire meeting. But obviously it's Eric, and he gives to others, puts others in front of himself often, and if he could give somebody else some time off to spend with the family, he would do that. And he did. So I was at the fire meeting, and in Freeborn, it's a town that has cell reception that's almost non-existent. And once you go into a building, especially like the fire department, it's especially non-existent. So I was in the fire department until call it 8:20-ish or something like that after our meeting. And I came out and I had several missed calls from one of our partners, the warden out of Owatonna, Chad Davis. And I thought nothing of it because I talked to Chad all the time. I figured he caught a good case or something and wanted to tell me about it. So I was driving home and I called him, and I could tell he was upset. Chad lives in the Waseca area. He's friends with all the officers and deputies and everybody in that community. And the first thing he told me was there was a shooting in Waseca, and that it was officer involved and that there was an officer down, and he didn't know who it was. So my first question was who's working tonight? Because I knew Eric wasn't at fire meeting, so he wasn't there. So I assumed he was probably working. And then Chad listed off everybody that was working and what was going on. And at that point, I still didn't know who was hit. I went home, threw on all my gear, and was going to start up towards Waseca to offer, you know, any help that I could from the state side on stuff. Chad was on his way there as well. And then I got a call from Chad as I was just getting ready to leave my house after I geared up, and he told me that it was Eric that got hit. And he told me that at that point that he got hit in the head and that it was not good, that he was still alive, but it wasn't good. And so at that point, my wife was with me, and I started crying at that point, trying to figure out what to do, giving her a hug. She's doing the same. And then I just had to keep going. And at that point I figured out it's Eric, and I just got in my truck and drove to Freeborn. And I had called Waseca County Dispatch while I was there and talked to the dispatcher. And he said that, Eric was on his way out, and that there was a trooper and an investigator from the PD that were on their way down to Freeborn to make contact with Megan, and that nobody had been there yet. So I went into Freeborn, and I parked at the county shop that's just down the street from their house, and trying to think on what to do in this situation. Or, you know, it's a situation no cop ever wants to be put in, having to go and tell, you know, one of your best friend's wives that they were shot, and it's really bad. And I sat there for a minute, and I honestly couldn't think of how to go about it, or if I should go up there at this point, having just a tiny bit of information on what happened. I mean, as law enforcement, we're trained to get as much information on stuff before we make those kind of notifications, so we do have answers for family, and I didn't have any. And it was my friend that got shot, and I just didn't quite know what to do. I looked at the map, and I saw that the trooper and investigator were getting close, and I decided to wait for them until we could go up and talk to Megan, which was probably a good decision, because as Megan said, I could barely talk to begin with. And I just remember, you know, going up and just standing there, and I can remember not being able to look at Megan either at it, and had, you know, no idea what to say at that point. You know, given, call it, hundreds of notifications as a law enforcement officer that somebody's injured or somebody's family member has died, you always tend to find the right words to say in those situations as best you can. Nobody ever has the right words. But you're usually able to find it. In this situation, I couldn't do it. And Lori told Megan what was going on. And then Megan, you know, had told me to go and let Eric's parents know what was going on. At that point, Lori went in with Megan to start getting stuff, and one of the troopers that was there, you know, asked me if I thought that we should get the State Patrol helicopter coming to take, you know, Megan up to see Eric. And I distinctly remember looking at him in the eye and saying, "Why is it not already here?" And
good and, question.
Right. And I'm like, that's not even a question. Yes. And then, you know, Megan got taken up to, I think it was Waseca, where the helicopter eventually landed. So they drove her to Waseca, took the time to get the helicopter down there. They met, and she's off to the hospital. So then I had not only that night was I there to tell Megan her husband had been shot.
I think his service is breaking up a little bit there. Can you hear us all right, Eric and Megan?
Oh, we can still hear you, yep, but Jeremy cut off.
Yeah, I think Jeremy's connection went bad there, so we'll have to circle and get the rest of his story when he gets reconnected here, but sounds like a pretty crazy night. Pretty crazy
day. For sure.
Well, sounds like, in my perspective, obviously I was not involved or not there too, but was it helpful, you know, to have Jeremy show up and at least discuss him? There he is. He's here.
We're back.
He's back. All right. So anyways, we were just trying to segue a little bit since you broke up there, but so you ended up, she flew up to the hospital, and then what did you do at that point?
So then I had a sergeant from the police department that I'm good friends with, Tim Harves. I asked him to come with me to help do that. We went to Eric's mom's house to let her know. We sent another officer to Eric's dad's house to make a notification to him. I never saw Eric's dad until later down the road that night. But I went to Eric's house, or Eric's mom's house, and you know, knocked on the door, and she came came to the door, and she was just like very puzzled on why I was at the door. She's like, "Hi, Jeremy." And again, I was more with it by this point than when I had to talk to Megan or be there when Megan was told, and told her, you know, that Eric was shot. I made the conscious decision not to tell her where Eric was shot. I left that out because obviously, and it's, you tell his mom he got shot in the head. It's, there's one conclusion that most people draw. Eric is this, you know, amazing beast that somehow survives this when nobody else does.
True.
And, true.
I still see myself.
Right?
Yeah.
Last week I was sitting here talking to Tyler, our nurse. I was like, "Tyler, you realize I got shot in the head and I'm still alive, dude?" He's like, "Yeah, you're one million, buddy.
I can't take you down." That's good.
Then I tell her that he was shot and he's at the hospital, and I need to take her to the hospital. And I'm like, you know, get your cell phone charger, get a change of clothes, get in my truck. And you know, she's in a state of shock at that point, looking for stuff and trying to grab stuff. And, you know, knowing that he was shot in the head, I'm like, I don't know if this is, we're going to get there with seconds to spare. If Eric doesn't make it, I would like to get her there while Eric is alive. If it's going that route, I need to get her there as quick as I can. So I'm pushing her along as quick as I can to, you know, literally cell phone charger, clothes, truck, go. And then we did. And then she got in the truck. We go, I'm running code all the way from Albert Lea, Minnesota to the hospital in the cities. I'm in a new truck. It's the first time it's ever ran code. And his mom is terrified in the passenger seat. Just terrified as we're going code down I-35.
It's a lot going on. I mean, your head's going a million miles an hour, then now you're going literally down the road code.
Right.
That's got to be a lot.
It was, you know, my mind's racing on what's going on with Eric. Is Eric alive at this point? Is he in surgery? What, you know, million different thoughts going through your head, and you're still trying to run code and deal with the stress of that.
Be safe about it, yeah.
Right. So then eventually we get up towards the cities, and I realize I'm from southern Minnesota farm country. I have no idea how to get to the hospital. B, have no idea how to drive in downtown Minneapolis because I avoid the place like the plague 95% of the time. And so I finally got on to with dispatch and said, I need some troopers to meet me and get me to where I need to go, or I'm going to end up getting lost up here, and it's going to take time away from her that she could use spending to see Eric.
Right.
So we got a trooper intercept from somebody that knows where they're going up there. Actually, I don't know if it was a trooper or if it was a Minneapolis copper or what, but somebody that was well acquainted with going there took us there. There were roadblocks set up for us anywhere near the hospital on intersections and lights, so we could go straight through uninterrupted. You know, it was cop after cop after cop blocking the roads, so we could get there. And I remember getting to the hospital, getting her out, and taking like a first deep breath that, okay, well, that job is done. I made it here. I got her here as quick as I could. Anything after that is out of my hands. It's in God's hands on what's going on inside that hospital. And we got in there, and I, like Megan said, there were cops all over. The show of support was crazy on all the people that were there. And at that point I got her in, and then just kind of fell back into the crowd for a couple minutes and looked while Megan and everybody was up with Eric. And then she came back and, you know, said he was in surgery and it was going to be, you know, 3-ish hours or something like that. And at this point, I'm just like, okay, well, we're on a positive note, you know, that he's in surgery. That's better than the alternative here. You know, thinking of other cases I've been to where, you know, if a bullet enters the skull, it takes the path of least resistance. Oftentimes it's around the edge of the brain instead of through the middle. I'm like, maybe that's what happened. There's less trauma to the brain. Maybe we have a chance. You know, going through all that, the different stuff that, you know, law enforcement sees on a day-to-day basis, dealing with a lot of the stuff. And especially in my line of work, animals get shot all the time, and you can see the impacts and where they're shot and what the damage happens. And then it was a long time in surgery. I mean, the clock just drags. You know, 3 hours seemed like 10, and then it was like 4 hours, and we still didn't know anything. And you know, everybody's trying to talk and keep Megan occupied and keep thoughts. There's a lot of prayer. You know, I believe your pastor got up there at some point before surgery was out. We had several, you know, prayer sessions and stuff up there. And then he came out of surgery, and I remember Megan grabbed me, and I was one of the, other than Megan and Lori, I was the next person to go in and see Eric after he came out of surgery. And it was a weird emotion seeing your buddy there. You know, he's alive, which is excellent. It's better than anybody, you know, would have predicted in that situation, but it doesn't look good. You know, I don't know. Eric's got, you know, a very proportionate face, and it's kind of skinny and stuff there too. Looks like he needs a steak most of the time. But when he was laying in that hospital bed, I mean, his head was, call it 3 times bigger than probably what it is now. Yeah. Just the amount of swelling was crazy. And he's hooked up to all this stuff, and he's bleeding, and, you know, just he barely looks like Eric at that point.
Don't recognize him. Yeah.
You know, I know it's Eric. Can see Eric. Barely looks like Eric at that point. I mean, he's all wrapped up in he just had brain surgery.
Right.
And after getting shot, and I didn't cry when I was in there with him, and I didn't cry coming out. It was the second time that I went in and saw him after that I just collapsed outside of the room. And I just didn't know just looking at him made me queasy. Like, I was about ready to faint, not because I hadn't seen the, you know, the bad side of our jobs and seen dead bodies and car accidents and stuff like that, just because at that point that finally hit me that was Eric and the situation he was in. And it just, you know, it just felt like all the life just goes out of you, and you're like, you're going down. And I'm not a little fella like Eric. You know, I'm
the first time cried in 15 years around me.
Right. And I wasn't going to cry around him, and I haven't yet. But I made it outside of his room, and I'm 6'3", 250. And if I fall, I fall hard. So I made myself fall against the wall a little bit before I did fall, and just lost it at that point.
Yeah.
And it was difficult. And then, you know, trying to be up there as much as I could, through his stay at the hospital there, and then his different rehab stints in Minnesota, and then COVID hits and nobody can do anything. You can't see anybody. And, you know, I'm sure that messed up a lot of, I know it messed up a lot of things with Eric's recovery too, not being able to see Megan and the girls, except for like a Skype or a Zoom call or something like that. But
yeah,
that was what I remember about that night, that He still hasn't seen me cry because of the accident. I made sure I got out of his room before I did that. And it was just something that I hope nobody ever has to go through again with their partner. It was a very long night.
Say that again, Eric.
I don't think I've ever told Jeremy, thank you for doing all that.
Yeah.
Anytime. You would have done it for me. That's for sure.
Yeah. No, that's a lot. I can imagine, you know, physically and emotionally, you know, going through all those feelings and having to navigate all those emotions in that time frame's got to be draining, completely draining. You know,
and yet I had no desire to go to sleep. I mean, I don't know what time we got out of surgery. It must have been 2 or 3 in the morning, somewhere in there. I had no desire to go to sleep until far after that, until somebody finally kicked me out of the hospital and said I needed to go home and get a little sleep.
Yeah.
And then came back up as soon as after that. So,
you know, you're law enforcement, you're a protector, and, you know, that's ingrained in you to, you know, be there and help people stand up and keep moving forward, you know, and it's pretty common for law enforcement to be the last one to go get that shut eye before coming back duty again, you know. So I'm probably that on top of being your best friend, you know, that's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, it definitely was.
Hard to think that it's been 2.5 years already. It's like at times it seems like it was like 5 years ago, and then other times like it just seems like it was just 6 months ago, you know.
Right. Yeah, and like you said too, you had that hurdle, you know, with COVID, you know, there that threw a lot of complications into things too. Eric's recovery here in Minnesota for a bit, but then going down also to Nebraska, right? That the next step was the rehab in Nebraska.
Yep.
How long were you in Nebraska for your rehab down there?
7 months.
So completely disconnected from the outside world completely while you're trying to regain, you know, get your feet underneath you, so to speak.
The time when he needed support the most, he had to do it on his own.
Because of COVID and being distant.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that definitely had to play a role into a lot of the recovery.
The team did well. Everybody was navigating with COVID. And then, yeah, they did very well. But when we had that time frame that opened up, I was like, he needs to come home. Like, he needs to be around his people. We'll figure it out. If we need to take him back, we'll take him back. But, I mean, nobody wants to be alone while you're recovering from this traumatic event. So, yeah.
Well, and the community really circled around you guys and helped support you as well, too.
Yes, we had people taking care of our snow removal, to mowing our lawns, to making meals for the girls and I, for taking the girls when I needed just a mental break. Between all the law enforcement organizations out there reaching out, making sure that we were getting all the benefits that were available to us, to checking in on us, the blue lights. Everybody has a blue light. Even to this day, the town of Freeborn lights up blue at night to just show that they were thinking of Eric and other law enforcement officers. Yeah, it was amazing. Eric really made an impact on all the surrounding communities. And what did you say? What's your thing? Always, what do you tell the girls?
I tell the girls just always be nice to everybody you can, because you never know when it's going to come back around and you're going to need it. And I got to see the benefits of that, definitely.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you guys got a pretty outstanding community there, especially your local law enforcement and other first responders did a very good job of helping out with you. And even the GoFundMes and the crowdfunding that, you know, people got behind and helped out with, you know, it's
that
life changing.
I was relieved to not have to deal with debt and just focus on his recovery, made sure our bills were paid for. That was huge. That takes a lot of stress off of an individual.
Yeah, totally. And then I got to meet the Mattsons, you know, right when Eric, a little bit after Eric came home from Nebraska. You know, Jeremy, one day at one of our work events, right? Gosh, when was that? It would have been in February, right? About a month after Eric was shot, you got in front of all the conservation officers and we filmed a short video for Eric, you know, to show him his support with our whole division with all our officers. And Jeremy had mentioned Chad Davis earlier. Chad Davis is also a coworker of ours. And I actually went through the academy with Chad. Chad's a veteran as well, military-wise. And Chad and I were chatting after Jeremy had spoke to the rest of us. And at that point, you know, HHO has been around for a little while. And we kind of started talking about different things that, you know, Eric enjoyed and did. And at that point, I think Jeremy and I started talking, I think over a beer that evening, about approaching Eric when his recovery was farther down the road to see if we could do something to help Eric too. And knowing that he was an avid outdoors person, you know, and I think Chad and Jeremy drove that whole conversation with Eric throughout his recovery. And I remember specifically, and I know we've talked about this before, but Eric came back the first time and said they wanted to go on a bear hunt in Canada, right?
And everyone was very confused.
Yeah. But, you know, being that Eric was still in rehab and trying to get things figured out and obviously function with his brain injury, you know, he picked a bear hunt out of nowhere and everyone kind of looked, okay. So my thought was, you know, hey, wants to do a bear hunt, we'll get him on a bear hunt. You know, that's, I can do that. So then we revisited that a few months later, right? And then it turned into something different. What'd you pick, Eric?
To go to Alaska to hunt a king eider.
And that's kind of the purple unicorn, right?
Yeah. It's like the most sought after duck for a lot of duck hunters. Just because they're beautiful and the environment they live in is so severe and pristine that it's kind of a once in a lifetime hunt to get to even maybe have a chance at harvesting one.
Yeah. So HHO, you know, took on this task of getting Eric to do a dream hunt that he was hoping to get off his bucket list before his injury, you know, and since his injury, now we still get to go do that. And I think it's, in my opinion, I think that, you know, it's really helped give Eric a milestone to work towards with his recovery too. And it's pretty incredible watching him get back on his feet and move forward. But with the king eider hunt, we'll back up a little bit. So Jeremy and Chad, you know, discussed doing the hunt with them and what we were going to do. Then we picked the king eider hunt and we actually landed on an individual out of Alaska. He's kind of the pioneer for king eider hunting, Charles Somerville with Aleutian Waterfowl X, Cold Bay Lodge up in Alaska. So Charles owns a lodge up there, but also hunts out on St. Paul Island for waterfowl to include king eider. And it's, for those who don't know, St. Paul Island is literally like one of the last islands out in the Aleutian chain out in the Bering Sea. So you're closer to Russia than you are anything else at that point. And even after Eric's injury, that's where he still wanted to go. I mean, that's pretty incredible. He even is, you know, recovering through this injury and getting on his feet moving forward. And he literally wants to go to the Bering Sea. So I'm like,
He told me that, and I'm like, dude, you know that's where they film Deadliest Catch, right? Have you ever watched that show? That looks insane. He's like, right. Yeah, and we're going to do it. I'm like, all right, well, I guess we're going to do it then.
Yeah. So Jeremy came to me and told me that, and he goes, yeah, Eric wants to go shoot a king eider. And my response was, what the hell's a king eider? Like, I'm not a waterfowler, you know, so I have other passions in the outdoors, but waterfowl hunting is not one of my priorities. So when Eric asked for that, it took me a little bit to see what it was and do some research and where to go for it. And I looked it up and I was like, damn, this guy put me to a task. So, but we're making it happen, you know. Unfortunately, the hunt got delayed by a year due to COVID. You know, not only did COVID hit when Eric was in recovery, but also it affected his hunt. So COVID's kind of been a thorn in everyone's side, around the whole planet, obviously, but also with Eric's adventure here. So the cool part too, though, is that Eric got to choose a couple people to go with. I'm going to go as a representative to assist Eric, you know, make sure he has a successful hunt. But then Eric got to pick two people that were close to him. One of them's on this podcast right now, Jeremy. And then also he picked his uncle, Paul. And like we talked about earlier, Paul's, his uncle was the one who introduced him to waterfowl hunting when he was 10 years old. So pretty incredible opportunity. You know, Eric made it through something pretty traumatic, you know, and he's continuing to recover. And he's able to go share this experience with a friend and a relative that introduced him to his passion of waterfowl hunting. So pretty cool deal. We're also, go ahead. Did you have something to say?
No. Okay.
Okay. So one thing that we also talked about early on was filming Eric's hunt. And originally the plan was just to take up our production crew, Rogue Productions, on the hunt with Eric. But then as Eric was in rehab, we had some conversations with Jeremy, Chad, Megan, about expanding that film just outside of the hunt to also include his recovery. So literally the day that Eric landed back in Minnesota and got off that airplane, Rogue Productions was there to kind of capture that homecoming and then also visit with the Matsons 1 to 2 times a month to showcase or show the world, you know, what this family is going through when it comes to recovery. And also with Megan's experiences in helping Eric and what the day-to-day looks like. And they were very gracious to let us in their house and see a lot of that. And, you know, it's not all easy, you know, especially for what they're going through, but to watch, because it's a lot, you know. And we really thank you guys for showing us, you know, what that all looks like.
Absolutely.
I think it'll be really eye-opening for people to be able to watch this documentary over time and be able to see that the effects that are caused that law enforcement do put up themselves out there for and what's to come after that. You know, a lot of people go through this and kind of life just kind of settles back down and people forget and move on, you know, and that's difficult, but this will help showcase, you know, the long-term effects that it does have on a family and an individual and the people around them.
Absolutely.
So we have this documentary filming with them, and it's going to run through the hunt, which is occurring in January of 2023, and then after the hunt a little bit, and then we'll release that documentary hopefully onto a streaming service such as Netflix or Amazon Prime or whoever will pick it up, and then everyone will be able to get a peek into the Matson's world and everything they've been through. But what is your guys' experience been? You know, how do you feel things are going with the documentary? I know Jeremy, Eric, and Megan all have been heavily involved, obviously. So what have your experiences been with the Rogue production crew and how things are going?
We have became really close friends with the Rogue production. We actually talk to Dale on a daily basis. He's too building a home right now, so that's exciting. And they're just, I don't know, they're so fun. They live so far away that they actually stay at our house when they come down too, so it's kind of cool just to like talk and have a couple drinks and just get to know one another. You have inspired Dale to become waterfowl hunter now. So Dale's like, what do I need? And Eric's like, dude, bro, I'll hook you up. Like, I got so much stuff. Like, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So that's cool too.
And they got to be there when I went on my first hunt back.
Yep. And they got to be there too. So was Jeremy. Yep. They got to see that. So that was really cool. Yeah. We love Rogue and we're super grateful for the opportunity that they are wanting to share our story and to have you guys be involved with that. It's just everything comes together and I think it's going to be a great, great masterpiece at the end of it.
And the hope is, and Megan and I just talked about this, is we're hoping to have some actual viewing premieres that occur in some various theaters throughout Minnesota or even different states to get some people together and go to an actual movie theater and be able to experience the documentary on the big screen and be able to see that. So I know Jeremy's had some involvement too. You've done an interview with Rogue, I believe, right? I think Jeremy froze. He's pretty stoic looking right now. You got us, Jeremy?
There you go.
I'm coming back slowly here.
That's usual for you, coming back slowly.
He's out in the middle of nowhere. He's in the woods out there.
Par for the course.
Oh, my internet relies on, you know, a beam hitting another signal on a grain leg that hits another signal on something else. And then comes back, and somehow I get this WWW stuff. So here I am.
So, Jeremy, you've had some involvement with the documentary, too. Have you done your interview with Rogue already at this point?
They haven't done the full interview on it. They've talked about it a couple times and then didn't do the full sit-down on it yet. But
okay,
I've done a couple shorter interviews on some different stuff. You know, the guys are great to work with. They came down and, you know, filmed a duck hunt that me and Eric did down here. And then up on Mille Lacs, spent some time with them up there, which was great getting to know them. And it was really cool. They got a really special memory, for me and for Eric on camera of Eric, getting his first duck after the incident, as well. Which I haven't seen the footage of it yet, but I'm assuming it's pretty awesome. So
I haven't released it yet. It's coming. Yep, it's coming. Yeah. So Eric had a lot of sponsorships and people helped stand him up for this hunt. So we got to give a big shout out to these individuals. You know, we had GETL Advisors made a substantial donation to Eric's trip, $10,000. Rapala Strike Master, they outfitted everyone going to Alaska with their float suits, with their Strike Master float suits. Those are pretty warm, well-insulated suits that they'll be able to wear when they're out in the Bering Sea, and they all float, obviously. So they were pretty excited to help Eric and everyone else on that, so that was pretty cool. Benelli in Covey Sales donated Eric a shotgun, like the state-of-the-art Benelli shotgun. Want to talk about your shotgun at all, Eric? I know you're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, it's a Benelli Ethos, and it's got a special coating on it that the salt from the sea can't corrode the outside.
It's light.
And it's ultra, or it's very light, so I can manage it easily. And I've shot at a Benelli for the last, like, 12 years, so it's the only gun I would ever use out there.
Yeah, Eric's on the Benelli train for sure. He got this. He actually requested an ultralight, and then this Ethos came out, which actually has less of a kick and recoil on it. But this new diamond coating, they can actually drop this shotgun into the ocean and let it sit on the bottom for X amount of time and pull it out, and it's going to be ready to rock and roll again and not corrode. So it's pretty impressive. But they were pretty gracious to donate that to him. Lots of other individuals helped donate towards the trip. We had Relentless Defender donate a significant portion of reduction of apparel. The whole community down there was pretty instrumental in buying shirts that were through Relentless Defender. That was quite the undertaking, but also really cool to see how many people ordered shirts. What did we say in the end? Over 1,000 shirts and hoodies and all that sold, I think.
Yeah, I think like 1,500. And there's more people that want stuff, actually, now that we're talking about it. They're like, when are you going to let another one out? Another order? That.
I was thinking that maybe we could redesign and make a new one for the King Eider Hunt coming up here that maybe had the eider on it. Maybe that would be something. So, yeah, a lot of shirts were shipped to my house, and my wife and I sat and packed them all and shipped them out, and it was well worth it. It's going to be good for Eric to get on this trip. And I know we talked about COVID being a bit of a downfall, you know, with delaying his hunt, but also kind of a blessing in disguise because you were able to get some more rehab in, right?
Yes, absolutely.
100%.
So you went back down to Nebraska not long ago and did more rehab, is that right?
Yes.
Yep, he went back down in April, and he was down there for 30 days. And what did you accomplish on the last day?
Well, the first time I left there, I left in a wheelchair, and this time I went down and I walked a mile for one of my buddies.
That's awesome.
And that's awesome. He had to quit smoking.
To keep up with you?
No, just as to stay healthy.
Well, that's good.
Eric won the bat.
That's good. Was that what? Who is that? Do I know that person?
Brandon Harmdrix is his name.
Okay, I don't know if I know them then. But yeah, so that at your rehab though, so you got some different Botox injections and did some more work on literally doing your training around shouldering a shotgun and shooting it, right?
Yes.
Yep, and they recommended that he possibly wear a patch over the left eye so that he can really, like, they noticed that when he was practicing shooting down there that when he had a patch on that he could shoot better.
So your eye dominance came into a factor when it came to shooting your firearm. Yeah, so the eye patch will help. So they gave him an airsoft gun and put a patch over his eye, and he was able to shoulder that airsoft and be able to hit his target, which is, you know, something that we were all concerned about for your hunt for Alaska, you know, and getting you able to drop that king eider. But your rehab really helped you get there.
That thing already.
What's that? Say it again.
I've had dreams about harvesting that duck already.
Man, we're getting closer. I think we're at like 182 days at this point.
I'm ready to see it splash into the ocean.
I know. I'm so excited. We just got our tickets for the next flight like 2 weeks ago, so we're ready to rock and roll, pending everything goes good. Fingers crossed. But yeah, Eric's been pretty supportive with HHO and helping out with different stuff, and we asked if he could help us out with something here in the future. And Eric's trip is now deemed what we call a series of trips called the Legacy Trip. And the Legacy Trip is something that'll take place every year or every other year. And it'll be a recipient that's within our bylaws. And they would have had to gone through something catastrophic, you know, either mentally or physically. Obviously Eric's is from being shot in the head. And they'll be a recipient of the Legacy Trip. They'll be able to pick the top three hunting or fishing priorities that they have in North America for their bucket list. And when they put their submission in, they'll have to write a biography about what they've been through in their life and why they feel like they're deserving of this trip. It's going to be hard picking someone, but at the same time, Eric is going to help us finalize that next recipient, which is pretty awesome. So my dog's barking in the background, so that's phenomenal. But yeah, Eric, do you want to, Eric, Megan, or Jeremy, want to talk about what there is to look forward to on this next Legacy trip?
I guess it's a way to get back to something that used to be a normal thing and help you get back to recovering and really boost your spirits.
Yeah, it's just something that watching Eric recover and, you know, talk about this trip, I think it's really helped him. Dude, I mean, I remember how excited he was to shoulder a shotgun, you know, in front of me when we were sitting having coffee at his house, and he's like, hey, watch what I can do. And he, you know, gets a shotgun up and he shoulders it and he's moving it around, you know, just to see how far he's come in that respect. And walking a mile, obviously this trip had a lot of bearing on that. Bearing on the trip. See what I did there? it had a lot of impact on his drive to do that too, I think. You know, it's a once in a lifetime trip for sure. And Eric's definitely going to be ready when he's up there. And like we said, I'm can't wait to see that duck splash into the water and get to give him a congratulatory hug or high five or throw him into the ocean. That float suit should keep him pretty upright and dry, so that might be an option too. So
oh yeah, and Shields Eden Prairie was a big help too. They got you a bunch of stuff,
like a whole new hunting wardrobe that day I went up there. Yeah,
he got, what did you get, like almost $5,000 to $10,000 worth of stuff from Shields?
new waders, boots, everything. Everything you need to go duck hunting in all types of climates, too. Early, midwinter, yep.
Yeah, I'm excited. And you're talking about that duck splash. I'm excited for that, but I'm also excited just to get our butts in a airplane chair and just sit down and be like, here we go. It's time.
Yes, sir.
Sit back and have a beverage with you guys up in Alaska. And we got Eric finally to his destination, you know, and then be able to hopefully see that duck splash, which will happen.
Yeah.
Oh, it's pretty cool. Happen.
And then the cool part too is we have people lined up to mount your king eider for free when you come back. That'll make life a little easier. Yeah. Yeah, no, very good.
Mounted, buddy.
Oh, yeah. No, Jeremy's just going to eat his or something like that.
I hear they taste great. I'm not sure.
I'm sure they don't taste great at all.
No, I bet they taste horrible.
Nothing that bacon wrap couldn't fix.
Right.
Well, I just want to tell you guys, I am grateful that you guys have let me into your world. I feel that we've all have gained a pretty good friendship over time here, you know, very unfortunate circumstances, you know, but it's also very heartwarming to see how you guys have made it to where you are and where you're continuing to go. You know, obviously a lot of life adjustments and everything, but man, it's inspirational. That's for sure. Happy to call you guys my friends.
We're happy to call you our friends too. Thank you.
Yeah. So,
he didn't go to the gym this morning. He had too much barbecue sauce, I guess, last night. So he had an upset stomach this morning.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with too much barbecue sauce.
Yeah, I know. I didn't get this.
That they would go to the gym this afternoon.
You going to go to the gym now?
Yep.
That iron?
Good for you. Look at that. Right. Shot in the head and you still go to the gym. I haven't been shot anywhere and I completely avoid the gym. So good for you. Well, thanks for your guys' time today. Is there anything else you want to add before we conclude the podcast for the day?
Thank you to everybody for the support and getting me to have this once-in-a-lifetime trip and adventure and getting to bring two of my best friends along. So thank you for the friendships we formed and getting my story out there.
100%, buddy. Yep, a lot of people surrounding you guys. Megan or Jeremy, anything else you want to add?
Just thanks again to HHO, especially thanks to Eric for bringing me with on the trip. It's gonna be something awesome to continue our duck hunting adventures. We've had some interesting stories come out of our hunts, and I'm excited to see what this one brings too. And thanks HHO for making it happen. So
not a problem.
Yeah, thank you for making Eric's dream hunt come alive.
Oh, I almost forgot one quick thing before we go. While we're in Alaska, Megan gets to go on a trip also, right?
Yeah. So while you guys are freezing your butt off, I'm going to be somewhere nice and hot and getting a suntan on the complete opposite side of the world.
Yeah. You're going to be down by South America while we're up by Russia.
Yes. So you guys enjoy, but I and my girlfriends will be... We'll think of you. We'll go fishing.
we'll get a satellite call set up and we'll compare notes.
You guys can make snowballs and we'll make sandballs.
There's ducks in South America too. You could go duck hunting down there too.
True.
Just a thought.
But yeah. No, so super shout out to Summer or hold on.
Charles Somerville,
yes. For giving me the opportunity and a handful of my friends to come with me to go down to their island and spend a week down there in the sun with his daughter. So I'm looking forward to that as well. And it'll be during the same time you guys are gone. So it'll be good.
Yeah. Awesome. They're incredible people. Huge, huge shout out to them for helping out with Eric's hunt, donating two spots for the hunt, and then also for Megan going down to enjoy their vacation home down by South America. So we really appreciate that. Very cool of them. But with that, just want to say thank you guys for being friends and sharing your stories. I know it's not easy. I'm sure you've said them a few times, but reliving those moments can't be easy, but makes you stronger for being able to talk about them.
Yeah, just keep persevering is all we're going to do here.
Attaboy. Well, thank you, friends. I appreciate everyone for tuning into the podcast today, and thank these three very much for being here. And until next time, you have a good day.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. For more information about Hometown Hero Outdoors, visit our webpage at www.hometownherooutdoors.org.